Telefon, Communication, Members, the other one will be written telecommunications and postal services. Members are requested to fill in the form and submit them back for logistical purposes. It's very, very important. If that can be done, that will help the committee section. That's the first announcement. The second and the last announcement, it relates to our email addresses. There are some email addresses that are not really working, are bouncing back, and it makes it difficult once they're sending us document in advance so that we don't only depend on the hard copies, we're able to get the emails in advance. So we'll request the members to resubmit the email addresses, we'll circulate a list so that they gave us the email addresses. And also alternative, currently you can use even the alternative until such time that all of us are now connected properly. We know that there are a lot of logistics that are still being worked of offices, etc. But if members can then submit where does communication go for them. Okay, we are now on our afternoon session for our committee work. Today we did have a presentation, and because it's the afternoon, we're still going to observe time like it was happening in the morning. The remaining presentations are two in number. It's a lot for the afternoon, but it's a necessary process that we have to undergo. We are going to strictly request those that will be doing presentation to adhere to in 30 minutes so that we can engage with the presentations. We don't want the first presentation to take all the time and you find that we're rushing on the last presentation because we've got a time limit for today, which we are going to observe. So I'm aware that there's a hand, and let me just finalize, Honorable Member, before I take your hand. So along that, Honorable Member, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have two presentations, and the SASA presentation will be followed by the post office presentation. Maybe before I call the presentation, let me take the hand, Honorable McKenzie.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I emptied my cubby hole now, and there was a courier envelope which had 9 copies of the SASA presentation in the courier envelope. And then in my usual brilliant way of doing things, I left them all behind in my office. So just to share, there were 9, so if anybody's looking for a spare one, clearly I have them.
Can you really hold the meeting at random? So you could have just asked me for mine, I would have given you. Okay. Honourable members, we are going to get the other presentation now. We're going to allocate it 30 minutes. And it will be the presentation of the Universal Services and Access Agency of South Africa. I'm sure they are already, like we did in the past presentation. Is it possible for them to do an introduction to everyone who's going to presentation and then proceed with the presentation? Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay. You're so far. Okay, proceed. It's okay.
Unfortunately, the presenter, but I'd like
to present
to you. Yeah. Thank you, Chair, and the co-chair next to you, as well as the members of the committee. As I introduce my colleagues to you here, I think it would be appropriate for me to wish yourselves and the committee well in the future tasks that you carry in the committees. Sitting next to me, Chair, is Ms. Mdlala, Zandile Mdlala. She's a board member. And then on my left-hand side here, Zain Nyahawa is our CFO. And then on the right-hand side there, we have Zami Nkosi, our CEO, as well as Makhoso Moyilwa, our executive responsible for planning, as well as performance management. So there's 5 of us from USASA. Remembering, I was quite glad when the chair earlier mentioned the fact that we're thinking of the letter we received and considered as a board on how many people should be traveling when we come to these places. But we are very grateful for this opportunity this afternoon. I will hand over to Makhoso, and then we'll be ready at some stage to take questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as per the introductions, the board member that are here is the chairperson of the board, Ms. Pumla Khatebe and Ms. Ndlalana. With me here is myself, Zamin Kosi, Ms. Makhotso, and Mr. Zain Meiwa. Chair, allow me to spend a bit of time, 1 or 2 minutes, on the mandate of USASA as stipulated in the Act. The Act speaks about USASA offering assistance to needy persons and defining what needy persons are towards the cost of provision for ICT equipment and services. Section 88, subsection 1, 85, spells out that USASA is responsible for the extension of construction of electronic communication network, commonly known as broadband. Not only does it confine it to that, but it also speaks about the connectivity of public schools, the connectivity of businesses, of government offices. It speaks about the connectivity of hospitals, clinics, primary healthcare facilities, and ensuring that people in the rural areas are connected. Our role is focusing largely on people in rural areas and ensuring that except identified access gaps are closed. A bit of a historical context, Chair. We come from a history of non-delivery. We come from a history of unscrupulous financial practices, a history of lack of innovation, where there was insufficient research that could inform our programs, where there was no buy-in of stakeholders. We limited ourselves in what we were doing, particularly with our scopes. And there was no long-term national plan as per the mandate. We are at the stage, Chair, where we are able to demonstrate the ability to deliver on the target. We have identified all the access gaps that has been that were identified. All the AG gaps that were on the management letter were been closed. The board resolutions to resolve to adopt innovative practices. The board to resolve to increase the research that will inform our programs. We are improving our stakeholder support, and our turnaround strategy has been completed. In terms of matters that are arising from the Auditor General last year, the Auditor General found instability that existed in the organization and long outstanding vacancies. Chair, allow me to mention to you that from 2001 to date, USASA has had 13 CEOs. The outstanding vacancies have been filled. We are in the process of filling those that are vacant. The lack of formal processes that to monitor the compliance with SEM, that particular problem has been corrected, Chair. We have developed project management templates. We have developed project management approval and sign-off templates. We've developed governance structures that record the project and give us timelines in terms of what the projects are going to be rolled and when. We have 43% of the targets last year were not specified. 29% of indicators were not well defined. The material adjustments were required, and USAF did not have a separate strategic plan. All these things have been put in place and they have been corrected. The Auditor General made specific findings around the stability of our IT environment, particularly the fact that we did not have policies, we did not have security, we did not have backups. I am pleased to announce, Chair, that we have developed about 9 policies. We have updated all those policies and implemented all those policies. We have procured the services of an external company to do our IT backup, and as we sit here, all these matters have been resolved. The nice thing, Chairperson, is that as of yesterday, we had a meeting with the Auditor General where he presented his management letter, and most of the things that were in the previous financial year have been cleared. We are still hoping that on the 15th, when he issues the final letter, we'll get our unqualified audit report. spoken a lot about the development of the controls to ensure that we increase compliance in the organization. Performance management that was non-existent at the time is in place now. We've developed a performance management and evaluation policy. All our employees have got contracts, and their performance management is done on a quarterly basis. The recommended financial controls have been effected, and on a monthly basis, we are able to produce annual financial statements and share the financial statements with our independent bodies committee. I've spoken about the IT strategy. I've spoken about the IT policies that we have implemented, and they're all in place. USAF has produced what we call a fund manual, which guides the agents in terms of how the funds of USAF should be dispersed. We also have developed the verification processes on how the work that we are doing gets verified to make sure that we do not go back to matters that led us to this, but the qualification that we have. I've spoken about the performance management system that has been developed and approved. It has been implemented. We can tell you at any given point how our performance is going per department, per division, and per organization. Additional matters that led to your qualification, there was a 45 million rand that could not be accounted for at the time, simply because there was no proof of the work that was done. I indicated that the project processes have been developed, project management templates have been developed, the project sign-off has been developed, and we are able to trace and check our programs and projects at any given point. The Auditor General also conducts site verifications. We've got independent people that are verifying the work that we are doing, and we are quite satisfied with the work that we are doing and the controls that we have put in place. Chair, in terms of the annual performance plans for last year, in terms of school connectivity, we had a target of 30 schools. We've connected 41 schools. In terms of the broadband project, we had two broadband projects that we needed to do. We have done two projects, one at Msinga local municipality in KwaZulu-Natal province. With this connectivity, we were able to connect three schools. We were able to connect 26 clinics. Some of these clinics are part of the pilot for the rollout of the NHR. We were able to connect the hospital, which is a leading three hospital in that part of the world, and we also able to connect the Department of Education in that area. We have also connected a town in the Eastern Cape called Emalahleni. This is a municipal initiated project driven by a Gazi executive mayor who wanted nothing but change and prosperity for her municipality. She's been driving this particular project. She's very passionate about it. I am very passionate to have. I'm very excited to have worked with a person of that caliber. In Emalahleni, three municipal offices were connected, independent offices. Three schools were connected and provided with gadgets, and 25 clinics were connected and two hospitals has been connected. A number of these clinics also are piloting the NHI. The GTT subsidy, the target that had been given at the time was 300 set-top boxes. Unfortunately, nothing could be done, as the project is largely driven by the Department of Communication, and we get guided by the Department of Communication in terms of what we need to do in that regard. Through our programs, Chair, we initiated, the target was for us to support initiatives by 30 SMMEs. We've done 33. We provided devices for internet connectivity to one municipal grade 10 learners at Msinga and at the Malahleni. We have improved on our research. The programs that we'll be presenting later on, Chair, has significantly influenced the research that we have. The programs that we have has significantly influenced the broadband policy that we currently have called South Africa Connect, and it has also significantly influenced the policy review that Mr. Tom Twaha is currently busy with. In terms of the APP, Chair, For this financial year, we have 10 schools that we need to connect, and we've got 5 schools for people living with disabilities that we have identified, and we're going to be connecting the school. When we're talking connectivity of school, we're talking about installation of about 21 laptops or tablets, interactive board, projector, air conditioner, a printer, and we pay for the connectivity for a period of 2 years. And we do maintenance on the school for a period of 2 years. In terms of the milestone for this particular project, the provincial stakeholder engagement has been completed, the political endorsement has been completed, and the procurement process are completed. And the budget for this particular output was 14.145. In terms of the broadband chair, we have identified two areas. One is called Rato Local Municipality in the northwest, and another one is called Tou Morolong Local Municipality in the Northern Cape. The budget allocated for these two projects is 32 million rand. When we do the connection here also, Chair, we will also make sure that we do the broadband backhaul, we connect the schools, we connect the clinics, we connect the municipal offices in that particular vicinity, so that the access gaps that are existing in that particular area are closed. Now, the nice thing about this particular project that we have experienced in Msinga, Chair, is that before we went to Msinga, only 2G was prevalent, which is voice. As soon as we connected and as soon as we upgraded some of the base stations that were there, and people started being able to get your 3G and your 4G, we then started seeing some of the network operators moving into the same area, upgrading their base stations. So the contractor that we were going was MTA. Then Vodacom went in there, since he went in there, and he started upgrading. And this is the type of intervention that we want to do to make sure that we proceed properly. Chair, in terms of the annual performance plans, we've got targets that we put in place. On government, we've got a board. The board has got its committees. It has got the risk audit committee. We've got the business development committee that looks after the projects that USASA is doing that are funded by USAF. We've got our human resources committee, social and ethics committee, and all these committees are, as per the law, four times a year. On the internal audit side, we've got an internal audit unit which qualified, suitably qualified people. There's 21 audits that were done in the last financial year. And these audits are risk-based audits. And because of the work that has been done by them, it then prepared us for us to be able to make sure that all the closed gaps, all the gaps that were identified by the AG were closed. In terms of performance management, Chair, I've spoken again about the existence of the performance management unit that largely does our planning, they do our business plan, they do performance tracking and monitoring, and they also ensure that people in our employers got performance contracts, and those performance contracts are adhered to on a quarterly basis. Stakeholder relations, Chair, you would know that in the past 2 months, there's a lot of work that we have done with our stakeholders, SAPC, that's focused on improving the stakeholder perception that people have about USASA. We've been in the radio, we've been on TV, talking largely about USASA, the mandate and the programs that we're supposed to be driving. On the financial side, Chair, we have produced accurate financial statements on a monthly basis, which we never used to do in the past. 95% of the actual expenditure spent in line with the allocated budget, 100% matched between the physical assets and the asset register, which was very exciting for the Auditor General, 100% compliance with the laws and regulations, that we have 80% compliance with USAF and USASA procurement of triple PE, and we've put a particular focus on ensuring that the risk associated with litigations were dealt with. And on the legal side, the structure was vacant. We had a vacancy there. We went and employed a suitably qualified candidate with great experience, and that particular candidate, instead of employing lawyers, drastically. We have focused also on occupational health and safety, and it has improved as well. I've spoken about information technology. part of what we are evaluating is that our systems must be 90% available, and that's exactly what we're getting because of the processes that we have deployed in the recent past and making sure that we deal with issues that were putting us at risk, particularly those that were identified by the Auditor General. In terms of the human resources, one employee wellness program activity conducted per quarter. We've introduced leadership training, time of submission of performance agreement, and ensuring that people are being assessed on a quarterly basis. We have recorded an 80% satisfaction level, and we have ensured that employees' grievances are being dealt with, and we're also implementing the organizational development plan. Chair, this is the budget as from 2011. You will see that it has been going down from 2011 from 69 million. It went up to 76 and then it dropped again to 61. We tend to think, Chair, that has happened because USAFA has never in the past been able to articulate a proper business plan to our shareholders and to National Treasury that would solicit more funding for us to be able to do the type of work that we are expected to do. Chair, in 2012, the then Portfolio Committee on Communication tasked the board, which was new at the time, to develop what they call a turnaround strategy for USASA. In 2012, the work of the development of the turnaround strategy commenced, and in September 2013, USASA submitted the findings to the ICT review panel. And this is the work that I'm saying is informing and informed the current South Africa Connect. It also informed the work that has been done by the ICT review panel. On the 23rd of October, USASA calls for comments on the national strategy. It was a wild consultative process where we involved people in the industry, some of the stakeholders that were identified for them to comment on the strategy. We also finalized the fund manual, a manual that assists us to disperse or dictate the process of how should we disperse the funds that are allocated to us. On the 28th of January, we presented this to the then Minister of Communication and we started engaging with the Directorate in the Department of Communication. On the 19th of March, Chair, USASA and USAF both approved the national strategy and they approved the fund manual for implementation, which means what used to happen in the past, where a submission will be received today, adjudicated today, money dispersed today, and there's no proof of work done, is nothing, it's things of the past. We have a process now that we follow, and that particular process has got controls that it goes with. Our strategy, Chairperson, is informed largely by the National Development Plan. We are very committed to this national development. We've embraced it, and everything that we do is developmental. We are committed, Chair, in ensuring that by 2020, 100% broadband penetration has been achieved. We are committed to make sure that by 2030, deployment of full range of government and educational information services are rolled out. The analysis, Chair, that we have shows that there's a number of areas in our country that has got full penetration. You do not have penetration problems in Gauteng, particularly in Johannesburg and Tshwane. You do not have penetration problems in the KZN, particularly in the Durban vicinity or the Durban region, and you do not have penetration problems in the Western Cape. You do have a penetration problem in other provinces like Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and other areas. Now, the areas where your network operators would want to grow, and there's areas where it is not profitable for them to go to, and those are the areas where government is intervening, and those areas fall under the access gap that has been identified. It is our responsibility then to say where the entities or the operators are unable to go, let us as government go and stimulate their investment in those areas, and that's why you see us going to places like Msinga and all that. Chair, this is a very interesting slide. This is a slide that shows you the level of penetration in the country per province. It shows you the level of connectivity of public broadband, which is your public building, and it also shows you the level of penetration for 3G broadband. Clearly you can see that there is a problem in Limpopo, there is a problem in Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, and Eastern Cape of serious gaps that needs to be closed. This ICT penetration chart tries to show, the yellow is showing you where the concentration of our access is. And the rest of the country, you can see that people, our people still do not have access to this part of the web. Therefore, the web, as dictated to by the NDP, has to happen. We don't have much of a choice. We have a responsibility to make sure that it happens. We've developed this program, Chair, where we say, in this financial year, we've got two other service areas that we're going to focus on, which is Jomo Rono and Ratso. But for us to be able to cover the entire country in the next 5 years, we have 195 sites that we need to do. And we've broken those 195 sites according to what is depicted today. We're saying by 2015, there's 30 areas that we need to do. 2016, another 50, 56, 55, and cumulatively they give you the 155. If, Chair, we can close this access gap, we can roll out our broadband and connect these particular places, this country would now start talking about moving towards being a knowledge society. But we need to start with schools. We need to start with APT colleges. That's where we need to start. Out of the 24,000 schools, we have done a number of schools, but we need to put particular focus on these particular schools for us to be able to teach our kids using a different type of methodology of teaching. Chair, we believe that if we are able to focus on this and connect these kids, these things of books not being delivered will be things of the past. Because what would happen is that as soon as the school is connected, you then download the e-books, you then download the curriculum that is specific for the particular class. Then you would not have government in the Free State, in Limpopo being accused of not having delivered books timelessly. We tend to want to forget people living with disabilities from time to time. We know the number of schools that they have, we know their individual needs, we know their school needs, we've mapped them on our program, and we're saying that particular focus also needs to be given to them. Chair also needs to attend to the police stations that we have. Gone should be the days when a police van would travel 300 kilometers to go and deliver one docket. And in the midst of that, delivering that one docket, something happens to that docket, then serious cases get lost in the process. We have to find a way to start connecting these police stations so that everything that we do becomes digitized. Local government buildings, we've identified the number of local government buildings. We say new local government buildings must be focused on. Healthcare facilities, we're very passionate about the healthcare facilities. Those of us that are still fortunate today to can afford medical aid, Chair, we say that let us prioritize the connectivity of clinics so that we can be able to roll out the NHI, so that the broader population that are not as lucky as me and you are able to benefit from them. Then the last program was the digital migration. You will see down there, Chair, that we're speaking about the types of budgets that will be required for us to be able to do this amount of work. We are at the stage, Chair, where we are at the tail end of producing the master plan, the broadband rollout and connectivity master plan of the country. And that we did not do alone. We did it because we started collaborating with other people or other government entities like InterSite. Now, many people did not know that InterSite, which is a subsidiary of PRASA, had rolled out a fiber along the rail. And there was capacity for exploitation in that fiber. We approached InterSite, and InterSite said, because you are working largely in the rural areas, we are prepared to partner with you so that we can tee off from our line. We also went to Broadband Infraco, and we sat down with Broadband Infraco. We used their equipment, we used their engineers, and from the work that we have done with both these entities, Chair, this is the amount of work that needs to happen. If you look at this particular map in the northwest, you see that these blue points or green points, these are what we call points of presence. From those points of presence, what needs to happen is that we just need to take the yellow plain fiber route and pull that fiber to areas that are not connected. And as soon as that has happened, then you are able then to collect those people. So there is work that has been done. All that we need to do is to go and tap from those points of presence that are already existing and make sure that our people are connected. As indicated, Chair, we are at the tail end of finalizing the implementation plan. Implementation plan that tells us the distance of fiber that we need, that tells us the type of equipment, the type of tools that is required for us to be able to connect those people in those particular areas. And we will be consolidating that information. In Limpopo as well, you can clearly see that there is a point of presence owned by broadband infrastructure. All that we need to do is to pull from those points of presence. But equally, there are railway lines in those particular parts of the world going to also be teeing off that would make our work much more easy. We believe, Chair, if we approach this, but if we follow this particular approach, we'll be able to close the access gaps in a shorter space of time than what we had anticipated ourselves. Eastern Cape is clearly shown there. There's good point of presence there. We just need to pull those and tap from those. So does Northern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. That brings me to the end of the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and also for keeping up to the presentation time. Okay, I've seen members. I'm going to open up for a discussion and the presentation for members who want to ask questions, who want to interact with the presentation, or even comment. It's fine. And I've seen two hands, Honorable Mackenzie and Honorable Davis. I'm stuck a bit. Okay, Davis. Honorable Shane. Coming this way, Honorable Mafulo and Honorable Sage. Honorable Masego in that order. Start Honorable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't know where to begin. The thing that seems apparent to me that's missing from your presentation is the private sector. And when I say the private sector, I don't just mean MTN or Vodacom. I'm talking about companies that are out there that have already laid broadband fiber into the ground. I looked at the last series of slides in your presentation where you were talking about point of presence. And what I want to know from you is, have you engaged with the private sector? And I won't, please engage with me afterwards. I'll be happy to give you a company's name. That has already laid 7,500 kilometers of optic fiber cable in the ground, of which 98% of that is unused and ready for leasing to government. That's my first point. And my fear is that we end up duplicating the effort of the private sector as government in order to get our people connected, when all it requires is an engagement and a public-private partnership with the private sector that has this infrastructure in the ground already. So that brings me to a question. What organizations or companies do you target as partners for the work that you do? And what form does this partnership take? In terms of the so-called underserviced areas, you've mentioned two of them. In fact, there's four in your total presentation. What criteria do you use? You mentioned the word used was gutsy, mayor and one of the municipalities. What criteria are you using to select those particular municipalities? And similarly, what criteria are you using to select individual schools and facilities that you target for your intervention? In terms of the broadband connections that you're supplying, and please provide some clarity, are we just talking about mobile connections, or are we talking about optic fiber connections? Your Cyber Labs project, and certainly it's laudable that we connect our schools and our school children, because clearly the thing that's holding everybody back is the lack of access to the internet and the digital divide, which is a problem in our country. I read, again, I talk about engaging with the private sector, I read fairly recently about a container solution that and it's a BEE company, as far as I'm aware, is rolling out across the country. And these things certainly seem far, far less than the 14 million you budgeted for 21 laptops and that connectivity. It actually comes in a container that this man can deliver with within a matter of weeks for a fraction of that sort of cost. I want to know if you've investigated that as an option. Just to turn to the DTT project, digital television, you've mentioned a figure of 5.2 million households approved for the SDB and aerial installation. I just wondered how you'd arrived at that number. In one of the other presentations we've had, I think it was ICASA, was talking about 8 million households that needed to be connected. So I just wanted to compare those two figures. Then including the 240 million rand financial allocation for 2014-2015, if I take the money that's gone been allocated in the previous financial years, that's almost 1 billion rand cumulative allocated towards digital terrestrial television set-top boxes and aerial installation. Do you still have that funding? Has it gone back to Treasury? And if so, I'd be interested to know if it's available. I've asked you about your ICT penetration, comparing mobile to fibre in the ground, and whether you've done any audits. In fact, whether any of our government agencies have done any audits on exactly what is sitting underneath our soil, ready to be used. Sorry, Chairperson, please stay with me. I'm still trying to navigate my way around this new technology. Young people can adapt far faster than us older people. On page 34 of your presentation, you talk about your strategic program. There's a massive jump in the deliverables, and I presume that's matched by your budget. Do you have the capacity, if government said to you, okay, here's your massive increase in budget, do you have the capacity to be able to roll out those deliverables as you've stated in your presentation? There's also a blank line under DTT in your budget. Do you know something that we don't about meeting the deadline for 2015? If you do, perhaps you would share it with this committee. And then in terms of your strategic collaborations, you answered the one question I had on Intersight, given that that's a PRASA company. Is Broadband Infraco also a state-owned entity? And again, where is the private sector in your planning? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, next, Honourable Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think we were all quite shocked to hear that you had 13 CEOs since 2008. It does seem at face value that you have put in place a lot of measures to stabilise the agency. My question to you on the stability is that on the 24th of June, the Minister of Communications announced that there was going to be a merger of USASA and the MBDA. Now, I would like to know from you if you think that that's going to help stabilise your work further, or is it going to destabilise it further, in your view, and whether or not you think it's a good idea to merge with the MDDA, seeing that it will affect your operations very, very closely. Then on the schools that were connected, you were quite boastful of the number of schools that were connected. It was 41 when your target was 30. But given that there's 24,000 schools in South Africa, I'd like to know how many schools you haven't connected and what is the backlog in connecting those schools. Because I think you're putting a very, very positive spin on something which is actually far more negative. With the cyber labs, there's 10 mainstream schools and 5 disabled schools, and that seems quite good. But at the cost of 15 million, it seems like a high price to pay. And I also wonder how long it's going to take to get other schools online, given that it costs around 1 million rand for each school to get them online. So I'd like to know why those costs are so high for the cyber labs. And then I think you skipped the page on the digital terrestrial television. I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, but on that page it said the 240 million rand was spent on around 2 million set-top boxes. Would it be unfair to characterize this as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, given the delay in the rollouts of DTT? And then on the 100% broadband penetration by 2020, we're 6 years away from that. It seems like quite a big target. I'd like to know where we currently are and what your plans are to make sure that we meet that target in the MDP. Thanks.
Next is Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I confess I don't really know where to start with this because, you know, for the previous times this entity has reported to us, I have suggested that we close it down. And while I believe that they are of good intentions here, I actually think that it's really lost its way at this stage because it would seem that it's taken upon itself the obligation to become the nation's broadband infrastructure installer or implementer or guru or something, which is totally, totally impossible. And I'm wanting to know, you know, you say you've done a huge amount of research. Who did that research? Because you sure as hell don't have the capacity inside to do it. And are you in conflict with SA Connect and the Broadband Council that is doing a lot of this work, has already done this work and to come up with the SA Connect plan? I actually sort of I'm lost as to what it is you're actually doing. And it bothers me an awful lot. I know, and sorry to my colleague here because he's not been involved in the DTT thing up until now, that you know, there is no set-top box happening. And that money is supposedly been set aside. But there have been, and in numerous presentations this committee or the department, the Portfolio Committee on Communications has had over the years, was this number of set-top boxes has varied between 11 million and 5 million. And the cost of this has varied. So we've got no idea what this is going to cost still. We've got no idea how many households are going to be affected by this. We've got no idea how they're going to be chosen. And, you know, and this is all supposed to happen within the next 10 months. And, you know, I know that there have been problems with the manufacturing strategy, so it's not perhaps all your fault. But to sort of, you know, and perhaps we need some clarity on this. So you've taken upon yourself to be the broadband rollout people for the country and the school interconnection. Now, I probably know about a dozen, if I really just put my mind to it, projects that are rolling out IT equipment and infrastructure to schools around the country. Does anybody know how many there actually are? How many government departments are actually involved? How much private sector is involved? Because I know Telkom is doing an awful lot. There are dozens of companies. To me, there seems to be a huge fragmentation of dealing with a really critical problem. And then also, it's all very well to go out and put all these installations into rural areas. But A, there's no broadband infrastructure out there yet, and probably not likely to be any for the next 10 to 15 years. And what about the power supply to all these rural schools and things? What happens there? And then has USAFA taken upon itself to be the IT arm of government now? You talked about installations in all these government departments, all these little hubs. It's a great idea. But, you know, you can't do that. You know, and you don't have in-house the expertise to manage projects of this magnitude. Now, I know that you said that you're the project managers, you're not the installers. Still, you've still got to have huge project management capacity to actually run that. And I find it difficult to believe that you can actually do that. So I'm wanting to know if there really is any communication between yourselves and the Broadband Council to actually manage this project, because frankly, you're doomed to failure again.
Honourable Mafuno. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues to welcome the presentation and commend the entities for the work that they are doing. I'm really happy for them coming with
solution to address the matters that were raised by the Auditor General. Hope that we'll get there. But applaud them again for focusing on public school, as we know that most of our schools are low school fees areas, had no school fees, so they don't have that capacity to connect those things. But just want to know which school, which provinces, are they covering all provinces? Because on their target and actual performances, we have to avoid this thing of maybe all things will be going to one or two provinces. They should make sure that all provinces are covered. And then the other thing, I don't see other provinces on their strategic collaborations. Why we are not there? And then their strategic program to 2019, I see under service local municipality is only two. But when you go up there, there are many. Why they don't start with the upper number than other years? Thanks.
And I will say.
Thanks, Chairperson. I echo the same sentiments. I think it's commendable to hear that you are now coming up with some intervention mechanisms to deal with the issues as raised by the AG. But the rest for us to be able to say yes, I think we can then be able to approve the additional funds that you would want for you to be able to execute your mandate fully. Maybe just to know percentage-wise, where are we now in terms of the budget that has been allocated to you? Where are we? Are we able to utilize the whole budget, utilize, or whatever, so that we're able to take an informed decision in that regard? I'm happy that you are now very positive on the clean audit that is likely to come anytime soon. But secondly, with regard to the issue of job creation, somewhere there was one slide that was saying you don't manage to create the job opportunities that you had wanted to create because you were seemingly solely relying on communications in that regard. But I want to know really overall in terms of all the projects that you are engaged with, how many job opportunities did we create as an entity? Besides the DTT aspect that you said you did not manage to create or to meet the target due to the fact that you were relying solely on the Department of Communications. The other issue is on HR. I think I also appreciate as well the fact that you are now even starting to target schools for people with disabilities, but I'm also interested in the internal, in terms of the government targets, the 2% and the 50-50% with regard to gender balance and people with disabilities, and also to tell us what levels are people with disabilities. If you have them, at what levels are they? Because we've always been saying to some of the entities earlier on that it's not enough to just appoint people with disability just for compliance purposes, putting them at very lower levels without them appointing them at positions where they are able to influence some of the decisions in that respect. And the second last one, Chair, it's the 24,136 schools that you are targeting for connection. I hope it's achievable, I agree with you in that regard, I agree. But I'm also concerned about offices of traditional authorities in that regard. The
perhaps we could also target them as well. I know, especially in the district where I come from, when the district in Limpopo, that these offices of traditional authorities are starting to play a very critical role in terms of the provision of services to communities. I had expected you to say something. Somewhere I just saw a slide which was talking to local government. So I'm saying it's one other area that you might want to look at going forward. Because these offices, as I have said, they are playing a very critical role this time in terms of the provision of services. If you can also do something about them going forward. Thank you.
Honorable Sotesi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also coming with the same sentiments of applauding the good presentation. And the government's plan is impressive, I must say. However, it just challenges of this region pose, because for us to implement we need capacity. And we have a proposal for new positions, showing that we are doing something to do with the situation of vacant posts. But then you indicate here the financial challenge, and you say you're going to fill this post in 2014. We have passed the first half of the year, we are now in the second half of the year. How realistic is this proposal? And also, we must applaud you for coming up with the creativity to realign on the basis of the existing budget, that is good cost management. You show to be proactive and not leave things to collapse. I recommend you for that. But it still stands in question that we need to be realistic in setting our targets. You understand the financial challenge that you are facing. But need to echo the sentiment, because not very long we're doing oversight. And I want to find that what you have planned is not take place because of this challenge. And on the staff turnover, do you conduct exit interviews so that you, introspection and develop mechanisms to deal with this challenge that you have of staff turnover? And the other one is for interest, big chairperson, on the wellness being of the employees. I'm just interested as to who is doing this. Do you have an EAP specialist in a form of a social worker or a psychologist or a professional counselor? Because the performance of employees most of the time is based on their wellness, and wellness is not only, you know, your physical being, but it has to do with many social challenges that you have to deal with. That's why we need a professional in that field. Do you have such a person, or maybe you have appointed just a manager to deal with it? Thank you.
Okay, lastly, before I take my call chair, is that another hand there? Okay, I'll come back to you, Honorable Van Dijk. Let me take Honorable Matzbein.
If I've just got one question.
Sorry, Honorable Van Dijk. I still had Honorable Mashrevo, then we will come after.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm mostly covered with quite a number of from my colleagues. I just want to caution the presenters not to refer to people with disabilities, that people living with disabilities. It's people with disabilities, not living. Okay. On the performance assessment, I know that you said you're doing it on a quarterly basis, but sometimes I've found that sometimes there's just malicious compliance, saying that you're doing it on a quarterly basis, and people just sign at the end of the year that it has been done. But when you go deep, you find that there's just cut and paste or signing one right at the end instead of doing it quarterly, as you have set yourself to be doing. And lastly, I think you are one entity that would enable South Africa to start that systems start talking to each other. So I think that we are on that path, but you need to do more to ensure that, so that at the end of the day, if you punch in my ID number, it should tell the story about me, from how many houses I've had, children and what have you, so that we eliminate and deal with the corruption that can happen when we work in silos or manually. Thank you very much, Chair.
Hello, Ms. Van Dijk. Thank you. In the strategic plan on page 23, you listed critical and catastrophic risks. I want to know, how can you or will you be able to achieve your strategic objectives taking these risks into consideration?
Co-chairperson, and co-chair, just for me, firstly, is to say to the entity, part of what we do as Parliament is to receive what is called a legacy report. And in that legacy report, it is work that has been done over 5 years by the previous committee. And I'm going to address myself based on that as well, part of the things that I'm going to ask. And for example, the committee led by then Chairperson Colwan visited your site where you said you've got 24 computers. They found 10. So I'm just alerting you that part of what Parliament will do, we might be a new committee, but it's not the new work. We continue where the other team has left off. The other issue I wanted to ask is, in terms of the strategic plan that we have developed, how does it relate, and just is it in line with Section 82 of USASA Act and ECA? And if you can share with us your progress in terms of part of the responsibilities, you are expected to deliver the 300,000 set-top boxes, which you have said that you'd work on. But another responsibility is because you need to identify the beneficiaries, the indigenous beneficiaries. Where is the process? How far are you with that one? And for me, again, the other issue I have a concern about, and maybe just to go, is on your human capital, as per your strict plan. You have 67 staff members, and my understanding is that you've got one per province. Unless if I'm wrong, there's 1% that is in the provinces that you've mentioned. Cape Town or Devon, the ability for you to be able to deliver on your mandate. This has been your staff complement. This is almost 67 people that you see you've got. And I'm glad you've talked about the issues that are raised by the Auditor General. But linked to the last question that I asked, not the Auditor General one, the issue of your staff complement. Because I'm raising this thing and other things out of concern, because if you look at your past performance, it really leaves a lot to be desired. You are not achieving what you're supposed to be achieving. You are very low in terms of achieving your targets. And that maybe could be explained, Kosha Person, in light of the budgets. Because there is no one who would release resources where performance does not speak to the budget. So in order for you to be able to say we need more money, you've got to be able to prove that you can deliver on the mandate. And another serious concern that I'm sitting with in terms of the performance of the institution itself. But we've got to be able to find a way of turning the situation around and ensuring that the institution delivers upon its mandate. If we are to reach the penetration that we want to do, if we are to have the access that we want to do, we've got to be able to speak to the capacity and to the targets that we set. And I'm a bit uncomfortable with the targets that are set going forward, because at some point, maybe just to go, you reflect from 0 to 1,000, when you've not been able to reach minimum, how are we going to, what has changed in the environment that would give us comfort that you would be able to reach those targets? Because for me, when the previous committee talked about your turnaround strategy, the need for the board to go and look at the turnaround strategy, there was concern. And one was starting to hope that we'd see some of these improvements and perhaps speak to the issues that have been raised. I looked at the risks, all of them. The worry, I mean, quite a number of risks that are there, which are real, which would impact on the mandate that we want. If our government is to talk about e-learning, if government, like you were saying, would rely on you to be able to assist the institution or the government to deliver. And if we can't sit here and have comfort that we'll be able to live up to that, it's really worrying. I'm raising these things because there are quite a number of things that I could raise, but just these things that I'm worried about, Co-Chairperson, the issue of just the things that they've promised to do but are not yet done, as historic from the previous committee as well. And just compliance, even just getting the things, you know, you want to have a situation where you know that the institution is doing what is expected to do. Just basic things. That's what one wants as a comfort. Your stability of the institution by being able to do what is expected to do. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think all areas have been covered. But just to emphasize again that from the previous report, it's indicated that 10 computers have been delivered, and your presentation now, we talked about 24. So it was an oversight visit. That indicates that it's 10 computers, so now it's 24, meaning that for us now it creates this gap that what is the correct one, is it 10, 24? Yeah, because we're actually, like she's saying, taking from her previous work into this current work. And maybe it does also to indicate that, well, then your structural arrangement, also from the leadership, the institution in terms of leadership, it does need some interrogation of time, possibly we get some time to get deep into that. But surely if you've got an indication, particularly in terms of how appointments are done, you can just throw that into the responses. There is also, I think members have already articulated to the issues of the top boxes. Just to give us where you now, if we're to ask specifically now, where you also in relation to the question that had already been raised. Just a quick that we're at this point at the moment. And with you know, lastly, just checking, in terms of your investment trends, I'm interested largely on the beneficiation for the broader society. Your broad-based black economic empowerment, is there any articulation you can refer to that this is how it happens? Are you investing in communities, and how do you do that if it happens? Otherwise, most do need a follow-up and thorough interrogation with time. I'll allow you to respond. Before that, the co-chair wants to raise something.
Which is co-chair, so I don't want to make your life difficult. Just one thing, if they can explain to me how the
that institutional framework. I'm trying to make sense of the institutional framework diagram. It doesn't make sense for me. If you can just explain to me, I just want to know, because I've gone through it, I've read it maybe twice, just trying to understand, because one would want to understand how the institutional arrangement in terms of research works. But this one was a bit challenging, and just even explain, because one of the things you highlight there, you talk about the office of the presidency. Is it either the private office of the president, or is it their presidency as an institution? And how does, because I see there are quite a number of things. Maybe let me just leave it like that. Let them explain then, maybe to look at, because I'm trying to understand how institutional arrangement, because at times these are some of the bottlenecks that holds decision making. If an institution is not arranged properly, it's not picked up, it's within your threat plan, it's not done properly, the reporting lines and how interaction happens, at times it tends to affect decision line making and effective work.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to assist them, the institutional framework referred to is on page 12 of the big document. We've got that. I think we also need to explain the context of the diagram. Chair, I thought I would handle three questions, and then the CEO and the planning executive can deal with the rest. There was a question asked about stability at USASA in relation to the merger of between USASA and MTTA. Yes, discussions underway. Position papers have been raised on both sides. So I can say it's work in progress currently, if that's adequate for now. As to whether the impact thereof, what would it be in terms of the stability of USASA, is something that we need to be watching very carefully as to how is it going to impact. But it's work that is being done currently, discussions on both sides, and boards will be engaging together quite obviously with the ministers concerned to bring that to fruition. The other matter that I'm answering this because there are policy issues at my level. There was a question that was posed about the alignment of USASA's broadband work to South Africa Connect. It would be folly through you, Honorable Chair, to imagine that USASA would do broadband work outside policy. It would be unthinkable. It's not something that the as a board would allow to happen, because it would mean that we're just working like in a jungle. So let me give comfort to the fact that USASA attended two broadband discussions, not even at the level of the officials, but at the level of policy and strategic thinking. So we're part of this. It was also mentioned by the CEO when we're talking that we align, that the easiest term I can use at the moment, that we align to SA Connect as policy of government. And then there was another question which you raised, Chair, yourself, and you said you need to have ample time, which we definitely appreciate. But very superficially, to perhaps say that in terms of appointments, the way appointments are conducted would be the board is appointed by the minister, as the chair would know. And then from there, the board would appoint the CEO, and as the new act dictates, the minister has to approve what the board would recommend. And then the executives are appointed by the CEO in consultation with the board. So they go through to the board for a board discussion and approval before the appointments are done. And then the other levels below that are done by the CEO and his team. So I thought let me deal with those policy matters and then hand it over to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think a lot of these questions speak to the national strategy on universal service and access, which is what we attempted to give you a quick synopsis of. It is extensive research. For example, Honourable McKenzie, your questions around the involvement of the private sector and so on and so forth. If I can just give you a brief overview of what we've done and how we've come to what we've done, we've concluded on. The National Strategy on Universal Services and Assets is a research project that was designed to assess to assess the regulatory framework and assess whether there's bottlenecks within the regulatory framework from a formal perspective, and then move on to look at the actual technical implementation aspects. So looking at the access gaps, and when we looked at those access gaps, we were looking at every single area and looking at what infrastructure is in those areas. And that is the basis on which you would then define an area as unserved or underserviced. Now, with respect to the question on the public sector, what we found was that the public sector's investment, primary investment, is in your urban areas, where there's a almost guaranteed level of return on investment. In areas where we are mandated by law, which is unserved or underserviced areas, which typically are your rural environments, there is little to absolutely no investment in those areas. And so that's why you're seeing us looking at government institutions to say, at least from a national backbone perspective, let us pull that infrastructure in there and subsidize it so that any operator that comes in on the access network doesn't have to bear the capital cost of deploying their access network and therefore providing service in those areas. And so that backbone will be provided on an open access network, on an open access basis, and will be available to any licensed operator. And that significantly reduces the cost to market for licensed operators in those areas, which is exactly the issue that they've been having with respect to those areas. It's too costly to go in there, because sometimes there's not even a point of presence from which they can then backhaul. And so they would have to roll out the fiber and then still have to roll out the backbone. The other aspect was also to test from our consultation, to test whether there's a propensity for licensed operators to roll out or to spend capital on the national backbone. And the sentiment is unanimous. They would rather not. They would rather focus their funds on the access network, which is the retail network that then provisions to you and I and everybody else in the country. So that was the rationale for then looking at state entities that already have existing capacity, and to speak to them to say, where you've got capacity, allow us to leverage that so that we can depress that cost and or extend your network so that we can depress that cost and therefore be able to incentivize the private sector to go into those areas. There's also the question around the criteria that was used to select municipalities and schools. There's a slide that the CEO put up there that showed the penetration of 2G public broadband and 3G penetration. And it details, if you go to it, it shows you what the current access is, and that was done around June, July last year. It shows you what the current access is. It shows you what the market frontier is. Now, when we talk about the market frontier, we're talking about that gap where we can push the market into and they can still be viable. But then there's a gap in there where it is absolutely not viable. And that is where we're saying we would then need to intervene. The market gap, the market frontier, is the one where you can stimulate in other ways for the private sector to go and then they can still derive benefit. Now, based on that, this is the slide. Now, if you look at those stats there, if you look at, for example, let's say Limpopo, the last one, the current access was sitting at 53% penetration. Now, we can push the we can test and say the market frontier can go to 53.2. So there's a gap between that. There's a gap between that 53.2 and reaching that 100% that we must now incentivize or subsidized in one shape or form so that the sector can then go in to close that gap. That is the criteria we use. So now when we look at this, we then say the likes of Limpopo, for example, the likes of Mpumalanga, the likes of the Northwest have the greatest deficit. And so we use that as a guideline on which provinces we would prioritize over other provinces. It's not a subjective criteria that we use. We've researched it, and we'd be more than happy to go into greater detail on how that came about. There was also another question for Honourable Mackenzie around the broadband connection. Is it mobile or is it fiber optic? It's a combination depending on which network you're talking about. Like I said, from the national backbone, it's predominantly fiber. However, because of the terrain, for example, if you take provinces such as the Eastern Cape, the terrain is such that you would need to pull that into mobile. And do a combination of fiber and mobile. But you might have areas such as the Northern Cape where it's fairly flat, and it would be cheaper to then roll out the fiber. When we were doing the research, at the time we were doing the research, for example, to roll out fiber around this time last year, we were looking at 650,000 per kilometer to roll out that fiber. That amount has come down significantly in recent times. It's in the region of 450,000, and so that's in a fairly hilly terrain. There's areas where we believe we can actually get it to around 200,000 per kilometer. So it's a significant amount, and so we have to weigh up and look at the terrain and weigh up the options from a cost perspective. And therefore, it would be a combination of fiber and optic and fiber and mobile. Excuse me. There was a question around: do we still have a retrospective funding for DTT? Yes, it's still sitting in our accounts. Yes. There was another question from Honourable Mackenzie around the fiber lab container solution. We can engage. However, what we have explored the container solutions. What we normally do is we make a call for proposals, and we get suppliers to make recommendations on or to propose what solutions would be acceptable or what they would deploy in these areas. We are guided by minimum requirements as agreed between the Department of Education and the Department of communications, or now telecommunications. So the minimum specification would come from there, and then we would then use it to roll out.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there was a question that was asked around the number of computers that were delivered, 10 versus 24. I would want to agree that at the time that was the case. This is one of the reasons that led us to get a qualification last year. But that particular matter has been corrected in that all the installations that were done were verified by three independent sources, where we had the internal audit going in all those places where we had done installations to verify the work that we had said had been done, and that verification was done. We had another group of people who were going there independent, and the last one was myself, where myself and the CFO would periodically visit some of these sites without any announcement, and we picked up that those sites were there. If you go back to the previous management report from Auditor General, you would see that there was a list of all the sites that were identified as not there, but subsequently when we visited them, the sites were found out and they were there. That's the first one. The second mechanism that we use to check whether the sites are there and they are working is the connectivity, because on a monthly basis we pay for the connectivity of the school, of the schools and the summer labs. We have a dedicated person in the organization that checks whether the summer labs and the schools are connected, and they check what is the uptake and usage of those particular schools. So we do know that they are there and they are existing. And that is why, if you look at the management letter that I received yesterday from the Auditor General, no mention is made of schools or cyber labs that were installed that are not existing at this point in time. That has been corrected. That is why, Chair, we spoke about the beefing up and the strengthening of our project management unit by ensuring, one, that we tabulated and we developed our project management templates. We developed our structures, what we call the group management committee, that looks at the investment and where the investment is going to be, and basically a business plan of why must we do that kind of thing. We also have templates that allows us for us to be able to check the progress of the project and the expenditure of the particular project according to the set timelines. And because of these particular templates that we put in place, we are able to verify the work that has been done and over and above the fact that we go and do independent verification. So the work that we are saying that we have done, indeed we have done those work. Now, if we go back to schools, the level of comfort that I have is that after an installation has been done in any school, we have the principal himself signing off and saying, I have received 20 or 30 computers in this particular school, and if there is a projector, there is all the things that he has received, then he would sign them off and put up a stamp. That is before we even go. Now, I don't think that there's a principal that would want to append his signature on things that are not there. So that gives us a level of comfort. The challenge that we pick up is that we do these types of installations, we train them on how they work, we turn our back, then they don't use them. That's one of the challenges that we have. Chair, in terms of the chair has spoken about the appointments. In terms of investment trends, on our balance scorecard, we have a target share. That says 80% of our procurement must be done through Black Economic Empowerment Companies. We then also have a target that says 25% of that must go to women-owned companies. We then go and say, amongst that, let's make a specific target for youth employed, for youth organizations. Check in the recent tender for school connectivity, we went and removed some of the clauses that prohibited the youth of South Africa from participating on these technical tenders, which required that people must have the license for internet connectivity, which is ISP license. Now, we then said, let's allow people to be able to do the installation, and somebody else must then come and do the connectivity. And the reason we did that is because in the past, we picked up that those people that were intermediaries that were doing connectivity for us, they were benefiting on the E-rate and they were not passing the E-rate to us. Now, the fact that we're going to be doing it directly ourselves, it means we are now going to get the direct benefit of the particular E-rate, and because we'll be getting that benefit, we'll be able to connect more schools. So that's what's helping us. Mark also spoke about the set-top boxes. There is no expenditure on the set-top boxes yet, so there's no 240,000 set-top box that has been procured. The money is sitting there. The money is sitting on users, but the project is managed from the DOC side. And that is why from our side we have not moved an inch on the particular project, but the money is sitting with us. So there is no fruitless and wasteful expenditure on the set-top boxes as yet. In terms of the risk, if you look at our strategic plan, we look at our strategic plan and we link our strategic plans to programs. For instance, there is a strategic risk that talks to the lack of or inadequate plan or business plan to assist us to source funding. That was the basis of the turnaround strategy. Now, in terms of mitigating that, we said, let us go and develop a turnaround strategy, which we have developed, which on the basis of this turnaround strategy will then be able to approach our principals and shareholders and say, this is the program that we need to implement for us to be able to close the access gap. And this is exactly what we have done. So in terms of our risk, we've identified all the risks and what mitigation of this risk. And Chair, on a quarterly basis, we have two meetings where we sit with the risk manager and the internal audit manager, and we assess all this risk to check the progress that we're making with the culture, with regards to the risks themselves. Now, when you look at the numbers themselves, this financial year you're only doing 2 projects, and let's say that you want to move from 2 projects to 50 projects. Any ordinary person would then say, do you have capacity to do that, to move from 2 to 50? The truth of the matter, Chair, is yes, capacity is there, because we don't implement the project ourselves. All that we're saying is that we've identified these particular towns in South Africa that we need to be able to do. We get the funds, we go out using Section 88 and Section 88, where we allow people to come and apply for funding. And as they apply for funding, we give them funding, they go and implement the projects for us. So all that we need to do is to have good planning, and by planning we need to have good planners, engineers that understand the broadband and the telecommunication infrastructure, that has got capacity to plan and interpret the plans. After that, we then need to have people that will do project management, and that we have in the organization. So we will not be, we are not doers. We don't go out and do those implementation. We go out and we allow private sector to come in and do the implementation. It is not us that does the implementation. All that we do, we make sure that they implement it according to the specifications that we have agreed on, and what they have said they're going to implement, it is implemented. Chair, when we're speaking about a broadband and the frontiers that Makgotho was speaking about earlier on, most of the network operators, they do not want to go to areas where it will not be profitable for them. Our responsibility is to activate and stimulate them to go to those particular areas. Now, we came up with a concept where we say, for it to be profitable for you or sustainable for you as a network operator, let's agree that we will connect all the government departments in there. So those government departments become your anchor tenant as a network operator. Therefore, you are then able to sustain yourself, and the people in the particular area then does get connectivity. In those areas. Chair, Member Sheen alludes to the fact that we are imposing ourselves as a national rollout of broadband. That is not true. Section 88, subsection 1, A to 5, is the one that says USASA through USAF must stimulate the construction or the extension of the construction of broadband networks. It is not us. We are not imposing on ourselves. Remember, there's a difference between an act and a policy. We are compelled by the act, not a policy. So we are working with the South Africa Connect. What you are doing here is exactly what South Africa Connect is trying to do. So we are working aligned to what South Africa Connect is trying to do. So it is not correct that we are imposing ourselves as people that have to roll out broadband. It is contained in the end. We don't do anything that is outside the end. The cost of 15 million to connect 10 schools. The connection of schools, it's not only the installation of computers. It is not only the procurement of servers. It's not only the procurement of, it's also connectivity. So if we get given 14 million, out of that 14 million, a good 6 million of that goes to connectivity, payment of connectivity. Now that connectivity is not only connectivity for the 10 schools. It is connectivity for the 271 sites that we've already established, because we have to pay for them for the next 2 years. And that's where it goes. So out of that 14 million, we would spend good 6 million paying for connectivity, not necessarily all of it for that. Now, Chair, we've also moved away from your conventional lab or cyber lab, because we found that it is not working the way we wanted to work. Chair, when we go to a school, the model that has been agreed to the Department of Basic Education is that we come and provide one connection point through a VSP or through 3G. Now, that then we go into the school and will provide each and every child in the school from grade 8 to grade 10 with a gadget. We would then download in the gadget the school books, the e-books, and would download the curriculum of that particular child in that particular class. Now, that child, as long as you are in the precinct of the school, you will be able to connect. As opposed to having one room dedicated only for standard 8 and standard 10. So that child will be able to connect. We tested that on the 16th of June in Soweto, around Villagard Street. It's working. So anywhere in the precinct of the school will be able to pick up connectivity and be able to connect. And that's the model that we think we want to go to. Because we have to move away from this syndrome that we have of people not being able to get their books and not being able to read, to retort and all those kind of things. Makoto Chen spoke at length about the criteria that we used to choose these areas that we work in. The funds that we have are unfortunately not sufficient. We do the best with what we have now, and that's why we started in Singa. But I must also mention, Che, it is the first time in the history of USASA that USASA is focusing on things that it is mandated to do by the Act. USASA has never in the past, never done a broadband project like we have done in Singa and Emalahle. And those are the kind of things that we expected to do that we have not done. So we agree with you that we have not done things that we expected to do from the creation of this particular entity. And here we are in front of you, and we say, Chair, we've developed a turnaround plan. We are starting to focus on things that we need to focus on, and things that we need to focus on is to make sure that we fast-track the rollout of broadband, is to make sure that we connect the schools, to make sure that we connect the government institutions and buildings, because if we could do all those kind of things, Chair, as a country, we would have done a good service for our people. And we accept that fact and we say, yes, there were mistakes in the past, but we've corrected those mistakes. And now we've got a plan that we've never presented before for us to be able to convince the powers that be to give us more allocation. But now, Che, we can do that. There was a question that was asked around the 10 schools, the 15 schools that we have not done, and we're in the second quarter of the financial year. Check, to connect 15 schools, we can connect 15 schools in a week. It will take us 5 days for us to connect 15 schools. It doesn't take long. The reason we have not done anything is because the user funds were only transferred to us late. And by late, they were only transferred to us on the 20th of June. If we had received those funds in April, those schools would long have been connected, and they would be on the minister's 100-day program. Now that we have the money, by end of this month, the schools should be connected. Because it will take us 5 days to connect all those schools, to connect, install, and train those people and hand them over. So it doesn't take too long for us to do that work. The last question, Chair, in terms of our ability to spend, in the last financial year, we spent all the money that was given to us for school connectivity. We also spent all the money that was given to us as a rollover for school connectivity. The two broadband projects, we've spent all that money. The last invoices will be paid at the end of this particular month, Chair. So there is a capacity to spend. So we understand that in the past these things never happened before, and we're pretty sure that now we've got the structure, we've got the capacity, we've got the plan, and we've got the controls to implement these programs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Sasa. I think many things do need, whenever you actually explain the more some other issues become clear, others are subjected to further questions. But I think in the light of time, we might allow these issues for our consistent engagement. Unless this member has very many issues, without suppressing the members, but I realize that we might need to really discuss in the future if members allow me to proceed with the agenda. Is that fine, honourable members? Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. We are going to, if we can take a permission.